Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the last episode of Double Cross Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Horton. I'm joined tonight with a former co-host, Drew Lamb, who's back. He's actually still always a co-host in my mind. He's got to join us tonight, and possibly we'll have a check-in from David here in a little bit. David Kirk-West, he said he wanted to come on, but he's got a bunch, of movie stuff going on, so he may not be available, so we'll see how that goes. Drew, welcome back. It's good to hear your voice again.
Yours too, Chuck. Thanks for having me on for the final episode of Double Cross Radio.
Yes.
It's been going strong for over 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
What, about close to 3.5 years?
Yep. This is the end of, I think this is 3.5 years, the end of this month. Then, for those of you who might be thinking you're going through withdrawal, Jules has assured me that she has plenty of relevant and good recordings of past shows that she can run as reruns until she finds a good replacement show. So you'll still hear our voices, sometimes only singular voice, excuse me, either Drew or myself, but... it will still be in this time slot for a little while longer until she gets something that she feels comfortable with. So anyway, let's get on with the show tonight. There's a lot of stuff that's going on right now, and it's our last chance to talk about it, so let's get after it. First of all, when I was chatting with you on the phone, on texting on the phone the other night, you brought up the interview that Tatiana Moreau's former guest on the show, twice, I believe, yes, twice, that she had with Jeffrey Tucker and Russell Brooks' mom, Lynn, and on her show that she does on, I think it's on Liberty Me she does it, but...
Well, Tatiana does the Tatiana show, and then this episode that I watched with Jeffrey Tucker and Lynn Ulbricht, I don't know if that was part of the Tatiana show or if it was just something that she did for Liberty Me. It was just a Skype conversation that went to YouTube. It didn't have any bumpers cut on it or anything like that. It might as well have been,
It could have been
the Tatiana show.
It could have been like the interview I did with Dr. Antonella Carpenter.
Yeah, and I might be on the Tatiana show sometime soon.
Cool.
I've been emailing back and forth with Tatiana, her friend and my friend, Liz Reitzig. Comes on the show occasionally to talk about farming and food sovereignty and pushing back against the Fed's moves to shut down raw milk, dairy farmers and whatnot. And we've been talking about coming on, but Tatiana, on the Tatiana show, Tatiana focuses primarily on Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies and that sort of thing, not really farming. However, I've developed a product that I will sell for Bitcoin and have advertised for Bitcoin. So So it kind of fits in a way. I mean, I'd be more than happy to sell any of my products for Bitcoin if anybody offered me Bitcoin. But
for all the rest of you people out there, I don't think we have many more days left. We may be able to count them on less than 1,000 fingers. it's man, the Federal Reserve has no place to go. I mean, they've painted themselves in the mother of all corners. And if they raised the interest rates 0.25% and they sent shockwaves around financial markets around the world, and so they're afraid to raise the interest rates anymore. And if they keep going like this, they just increase the tsunami of inflation that's going to hit whenever they stop, and they just keep making the potential damage even worse. And they're at the same time they're making zombies out of all the banks in the world. It's just.
Well, they really screwed up with that quarter point interest rate hike. You know, they tried to fake everybody out, make them think that everything was great, and things aren't great. You know, cargo ships are coming across the Pacific from China. Nothing's going back. Oil prices have collapsed, which I think is good, but that's causing deflation across the board, which because if the Fed wanted to deal with that properly, they would have lowered, but they couldn't. They didn't have any room and not raise interest rates.
And Drew, there's another thing on this oil thing. I think what happens, the Fed had a lot of, the Fed's got derivatives, I think, on all the shale oil stuff. And by the oil prices going down, they're losing their asses.
Yep. Oh, completely. Yeah. You know, everybody silly, you know, screw the Saudis. We'll get our own stuff going on here. And, you know, and the shale operation started and you know, these guys just got pantsed. You know, Saudis have plenty of oil. You know,
Saudis play hardball.
You remember Michael Rupert with his peak oil shtick, you know?
Yeah.
Years ago, when was that, 15 years ago or whatever, he was scaring everybody.
There was a guy at my Rotary Club a while back, when I was still belonged to that came on and talked about peak oil, and I stood up and I said, "Do you really believe this, what you're saying?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah." He says, I went, "Wow." And I went home, and at the time, his company had a lot of the securities for the trust that I helped manage. I went back and says, "Take everything out of there."
Yeah. Yeah. I think that my family's got a little bit of exposure to Canadian oil stocks. I'm a little bit worried we might have a bad Christmas. But you know, I hope not. But in the meantime, I mean, I have to drive around a lot, and it's nice having gas below $2 a gallon. You know, cut my overhead a lot.
You know, Drew, it isn't like we haven't been warning them for 3.5 years.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You shouldn't even be in any markets right now. You shouldn't be playing stocks, bonds, any of that. That's just you're gonna lose out. you're gonna lose it all.
When someone as smart as Gerald Celente gets taken down, you know, for his on that gold transaction, which he had to fight, like he probably spent $100,000 getting his money back.
Yeah, yeah. It's
totally rigged market. It just there's no way that someone should be able to do that and not go to prison.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he wasn't holding his own gold, and they just took it.
Mm-hmm.
They just took it. That's how these guys operate.
Yeah, it was a futures market, and he was gathering up his money in his trading account because he was going to take delivery on it, and they just took all the money out of the account, and then they told him he had a margin call, didn't have enough money in his account, they sold it all, and so he lost all the profits he had on his trade. Yep. Just what a
bunch of crooks.
Bunch of crooks.
You know? Yeah, yeah. It's you know, you want to be controlling your own assets directly. And basically where we're at right now, I mean, things are bad. I was watching an interview on RT with spooky dude George Soros, and he was just casually talking about how you know, we're back into the 2008 recession depression. Well, he never really left it, but you know, and he blamed Yellen for making that stupid decision to raise a quarter point and then not backing up on it, you know, not saying, oh, we screwed up. Let's roll it back down.
By the way, for those of you who don't know who George Soros is, we should say former Jewish Nazi collaborator.
Well, right. Soros has made his billions in currency arbitrage, where you're mm-hmm. You're trading foreign currencies and Forex, and you're buying in one market and selling in another. And his entire career has been devoted to this. And
one of the ways he enhances his profits is by destroying economies.
Right. He does this under the guise of openness. He has an organization that promotes open societies, and he comes in and he shakes things up and, you know, and causes these societies to collapse and trades the currencies. And I know this because I've read his books. I when I was in my mid-20s, I wanted to learn about Forex trading. I'd done really well in the stock market studying Warren Buffett and Ben Graham, who Buffett was schooled by, and Buffett worked for Graham. And I wanted to learn about Forex trading. So I figured Soros was the best. And so I went to Powell's Books in Portland, and I found his books and started reading his books and learning about it. And then I learned about how these guys operate. And I was pretty blown away about it. So you know, as we fast forward to now, I'm not surprised by these things that I see, because I understand what these guys are all about. You know, he was pretty straightforward about how he makes his money. You know, and that's how you become a billionaire. You know, not anybody could just get into Forex trading and make a bunch of money. I mean, he makes things happen so that he will profit. And so, you know, where we're at now is it's all going down in flames. And so, I mean, what we got to do is start focusing on local efforts. You know, you got to get your food, energy, water in place and start controlling those things. You know, if you're in a place where we are, you know, we have some battles to fight here, you know, where they want to bust out dams on the Klamath River, you know, to save the spotted salmon or whatever. And, you know, that's going to affect farmers in the Klamath Basin. It's going to affect irrigation water that comes through the Talon Irrigation District to irrigate Southern Oregon farms and vineyards. And also it's going to massively drive up the price of energy, because there won't be dams there, hydroelectric dams.
It's also going to help depopulate what I would call the area otherwise known as the state of Jefferson, Northern right. California and Southern Oregon.
So this is where the
mining concerns from China can come in and rape the earth.
Right. I mean, this is where the big fight is. You know, these types of things. You know, we got to pay attention to what's going on and push against them. Keep these things from happening, because this is what's being used against people to depopulate areas. You know, put people out of business, put farmers out of business, shut down industries. This is all happening. And another thing too, this is interesting. If you look at who's buying these dried up farmlands down in California, it's the Saudis. Go figure. You know. Yeah, so,
you know. I've always been a fan of science fiction. A long time ago, I bought this book at a used bookstore, and it looked like it had kind of a interesting plot, but it was just a horribly written book. But it just laid out this future world where the world was run on a kind of a. There are three major zones of control, and one group controlled food, another group controlled oil, and another group controlled something else. I don't remember what it was. And the United States was in the food group, and the Middle East nations were in the oil group, and tell you, they did not play well together. it was a horrible book. I don't recommend it to anybody, but I felt like I was reading as my life has progressed. I felt like, oh yeah, that book I read that was horrible. Yeah, that's kind of what they were talking about here. And it's happened. So much of what was in that book has happened. It's just, yeah. It's eerie almost. Like it's been like they were just telling the plan in advance. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that movie, 3 Days of the Condor?
No, I did not.
That's, by the way, any of you people out there that have not seen this movie besides Drew, it's really a good book. It's a good movie. It's even today where their technology that they're exploiting to make this believable is considered, you know, Stone Age stuff. It still is a cool movie. It's kind of suspenseful. It has several twists in it. It's a pretty interesting movie. I thought it was pretty good. Robert Redford's in it. The famous line he has, I read books.
So we're talking about this issue that's happening in the region of Southern Oregon, Northern California, otherwise known as the state of Jefferson, and so a lot of people that are involved in the state of Jefferson movement, you know, are aware of this issue with the water, you know, and are pushing back against it, and a lot of the folks that were involved in the Jefferson Republic movement, you know, are also even more so aware of this, and I think that
this chair is squeaking. Sorry, excuse me.
It's okay. And state of Jefferson movement starting to pick up some steam again, like Southern Oregon, Jackson County. There's a group that's meeting regularly to talk about getting something going. I don't know if they're going to do some kind of petition initiative or what. I haven't gotten to any of the meetings yet. Colorblind Justice is part of it, and Eric Dubin, mm-hmm. former guest of the show. They've invited me to be a part of it, and I don't, and you and I, you know, stopped supporting this quite a while ago to back the Jefferson Republic, because why create a state when we could create a new republic, not have to ask permission? And we came really close to making that happen in Siskiyou County.
Yeah,
we lost by a 5% margin. But I got to thinking about this just this week. You know, it's the Free State Project in New Hampshire hit a critical benchmark. Their goal since they started this, I can't remember when. What was it, like early 2000s?
No, it was in the 90s.
Okay. Well, the goal was to get 20,000 people to 20,000 libertarian-minded people to pledge to move to New Hampshire, and the whole plan was that if you get enough like-minded people to move to a sparsely populated state, that you'd have a shot at actually implementing some change. You know, and having a state where there's very small, limited government, you know, you and I would like to have none whatsoever, but, you know, there's compromises that have to be made, and so, you know, whittling it down is a step in the right direction. So they finally crossed this benchmark, and so at this point, everybody who's pledged, you know, is supposed to be moving there and, you know, implementing this plan, and maybe that would be a good thing to do with the state of Jefferson movement, and change it to the Free State of Jefferson movement, and get people to, you know, pledge to move to this region if we get, you know, enough people to agree to it, you know, and you know, maybe that's the way that it ought to work.
They could have their choice of states to withdraw from.
Yeah, exactly.
You can live in Jackson County and withdraw from Oregon, or you can live in Siskiyou County and withdraw from California.
Right. Yeah.
And you'll be living, and you could have neighbors just miles apart in the other state. Yeah. I think it would be awesome. I mean, it's becoming more apparent to me that the people in charge of the state of Oregon are just criminal thugs.
Absolutely. We have a governor who wasn't elected, and she just she's a hardcore progressive, and she rolls out new laws almost every day. I mean, you open up the Oregonian newspaper, and there's always a picture of Commie Kate with a bunch of creepy progressives standing behind her with smiles as she's signing some nasty thing into law, you know, that's gonna destroy business, limit freedom, take your guns away.
And let me tell you, if you stand up, protest this baby, she's gonna have the state police come down and run you off the road and shoot you.
Oh yeah, they'll set up an ambush and they'll take you out. You know, and she's completely anti-industry. You know, look at what's going on in Portland right now. I don't know what was going on. I don't. I don't get this, but somebody decided to cut some moss off the side of a tree and test it, you know, and it had like high levels of arsenic in it, and so they set off alarms, and the EPA's gotten involved, and the DEQ and the PDQ and whatever, and they were trying to figure out like, wow, where's this arsenic coming from? We've got to figure this out, and so they were looking at all the businesses in this neighborhood and trying to figure out where this stuff might have come from, and they concluded that there were two boutique glass manufacturers in the Southeast Portland area that were working with some metals and substances that, you know, and arsenic and cadmium and things like this, and these businesses actually had permits to work with this stuff that they paid for from the EPA, and so now they're being blamed for this contamination, and so they voluntarily stopped using these substances because they didn't want to continue to be the problem if they were the problem. But one business in particular didn't really think that they were a problem. They thought that the request from the government to stop using these substances was bizarre and unfounded, and they really can't tie it to them, you know, one way or the other, you know, where this came from. It could have been phyto-extracted, you know, for that matter. Who knows? But they didn't voluntarily.
Could be an old apple orchard.
Who knows? Yeah, exactly. They didn't voluntarily choose to stop using this stuff until Commie Kate, the governor, got involved and called them up, and God knows what she threatened them with, you know. And then they're like, "Oh, okay, fine. We'll stop using this stuff," you know. And now.
And then when they hung up the phone, their next call was to a land agent in another state saying, "Get me some place where I can relocate my factory."
Yeah. Really. Yeah, and now they're warning people not to eat from their gardens, you know, that their gardens could be contaminated, and they're just totally scaring people.
Does anybody out there realize that there are trace amounts of arsenic in apples?
Oh my God!
An apple is a really good. That's why it's really good for your heart, and it's really good cancer fighter because the arsenic kills cancer cells. How about that?
Yeah.
But
yeah, well,
in small amounts, it's not harmful.
Small amounts, it's not harmful. Yeah, exactly. It's fine. Yeah, and I'm sure that it's small amounts in the moss growing on the trees.
Yep.
Who knows where that came from? It could have come from all sorts of places. But
there's a problem. You know, Oregon schools used to be rated among the top five in the nation year after year after year. And now it's a good thing there's Mississippi is still in the union, because if it wasn't, we'd have the worst schools in the nation.
Well, you know, those kids have a big name to spell there.
Yeah. We wanted to talk a little bit about Ross Ulbricht. I think we should probably switch over there before we run out of time, because we could talk about this the rest of the day. I'm enjoying this very much.
Well, right. You know, back to Tatiana interviewing Lynn Ulbricht, and you know, Ross is in prison. He was convicted of being the Dread Pirate Roberts of the Silk Road, and to be fair,
he was for a time one of the Dread Pirate Roberts, but
they set up this website as an experiment.
Yes, it was
a social
highly decentralized system, so there were many Dread Pirate Roberts.
Right. And you could get on there, and there was all kinds of things you could buy on there. I set up an account on there just to see what a true agorist market would be like. You know, it was a true agora.
It was, and he proved that it works. You don't need a government,
right? And there were all kinds of things on there. I mean, you could buy all sorts of items, but mostly there were drugs on there, and you could buy anything. Anything was available on there, and I never purchased anything in there. I never funded a Bitcoin wallet on there. I just got on there just to see what was there, what was it like, you know, look around, and everything was available, but you know, so these. These So these government agents investigated him, and they ended up taking over the Silk Road and running the Silk Road for a couple of years. And they actually were the Dread Pirate Roberts. They had access to everything.
Right, they had access to everything an administrator would have.
Yeah, they had full admin access, and they were selling drugs. They were stealing Bitcoin, laundering Bitcoin, making millions of dollars,
committing all sorts of crimes.
Oh yeah, and then they were you know framing Ross, setting him up with these fake hits
now,
and things.
I should say this about a lot of these crimes: laundering money really is a victimless crime.
Right.
If it wasn't for the other ridiculous crimes, it wouldn't have any significance, and no one would have a reason to launder money. And certainly, if you think it's a crime for somebody to put whatever they want to in their body, then I guess maybe you could be on the state side on this one. But I think that prohibiting people from putting things in their body that they want to is kind of totalitarian in nature. So I have trouble seeing that as a crime as well.
Right. So these investigators, these were the guys that put together all the evidence that was used to indict and convict Ross. And then these guys were convicted of all these crimes, you know, that they committed. But this evidence wasn't brought before the court.
It was brought before the court, but the judge disallowed it.
Yes. Yeah. And this is relevant information, you know. All the evidence is tainted, you know. And he was set up, you know. There were these murder for hire schemes that he was accused of being involved in that he wasn't.
And this judge was so stupid. I mean, this is so open for appeal. In fact, they filed an appeal, and they could have put a lot more in it, but there's a limit to how much you can write in your appeal. But In her sentencing, she made a quote that Ross's libertarian writings were very troubling.
Yes.
And no wonder she didn't allow any of this evidence. She wanted to hang him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, man, talk about a prejudicial judge. She's supposed to judge, not, you know, not have a philosophical bent on this.
Right. And then, you know, they put him in prison. They put him in solitary confinement, I think, for what was it, 6 weeks, I think, for no reason. They moved him recently, and so he's in a different prison in New York right now. They moved him. It sounds like he has a little bit more room to move around than he did before, but he's having problems getting visitors. Even his mom's having problems seeing him. There's a form that he needs to fill out, and the people who run the prison, you know, they're supposed to get these forms to the prisoners so they could fill them out and get them processed.
People, they send letters to the people on the list, and then you have to fill out forms, and then you can get on
They're not getting Ross the forms. And then when his mom asks about it, they go, no, everybody gets the forms. He gets the forms. But Ross says he's not getting the forms. And so he's not able to see anybody. He's not able to get any visitors. And right now he doesn't even have his books because they transferred him. And he's really bored. You know, he's just sitting there, not much to do, nothing to work on, nothing to read, can't see any visitors. You know,
they probably won't give him a pencil and paper because they're afraid he'll use it as a weapon.
Right. So there's
this guy who is so into the non-aggression principle that he's even sad that one of the people that framed him was arrested. He says, "I feel bad for he and his family." And, you know, it's just like the guy doesn't have a mean streak in him at all.
Right. Right. So anyways, I mean, there's hope for Ross. You know, but it's expensive to challenge the government. You know, he needs an appeal, and it takes a lot of money.
They took all his Bitcoin.
Right. It takes.
He has no resources, basically.
Yeah, his defense is going to be really, really expensive. He needs all the help that he can get. You can go to freeross.org, and there's this really cool game on there, and Ross drew a picture with pencil and paper of what his trial looked like to him through his eyes. And this game covers up the picture, and you could purchase little squares,
pixels
on the cover, little pixels, and you can remove the pixel to help reveal the picture. So mm-hmm. I can't remember how much it is. You know, it's like $10 a pixel or something.
And people are being very creative. They're removing certain pixels to leave messages to, like, "I love you, Ross," and "Bitcoin forever" and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's very clever, mm-hmm. and this is a way to help Ross fund his fight against the government. Hopefully.
And some of you people out there may think, well, this is his fight, and he got his trial, got his day in court. Our court system doesn't work anymore, fellas. When you have a 99% conviction rate, I mean, we all have had experience with government. Can you believe that they're 99% right when they bring something to trial? No, they don't. Every one of these trials is rigged for a long. I mean, I remember back a few years ago. This was, I believe, this was in the late 90s. FBI lab in New England. Some people got caught or confessed to rigging their results on their lab results, so they sent innocent men to prison.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And so, you know, they're just filled with stuff like that where they just rig the game so you cannot possibly win. It's really hard to even win an appeal. Well, so they don't like to be shown up. There's a prosecutor in there. His career is on the line. He's going to do whatever he can to not get that appeal even be heard.
But the problem is that the plaintiff is the government. You know, and so you've got the guy who collects the evidence, the investigators, they work for the government. Mm-hmm. You know, the prosecution works for the government. Judge works for the government. You know, it's completely stacked against you. How could you win that? Plus the system has unlimited resources.
And they pick the grand jury to indict you in the first place.
Right.
And they deny the evidence, the exculpatory evidence that would prove you innocent.
Right. You know,
yep, it's going to be pretty tough to overturn this, but I think society as a whole will benefit from being enlightened, at least those that are willing to look up and follow this, as we did on the first trial, that this is a rigged game. Don't depend on the courts to bail you out.
Yeah,
exactly. It's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, the only way to beat this is to have a lot of supporters. You know, so you could fund your appeal,
mm-hmm.
and have a dodge sooner
instead of later. You could do the Jeff Berwick philosophy and leave.
Now that's a good one too. And I'm wondering, you know, at what point do, you know, people get fed up with this and start, you know, raising funds to come in with a team and a helicopter and just get these guys out, you know? You know, I mean, it's like there's so many political
I don't think they'll have to wait much longer. I think the whole government's about ready to collapse. It's probably less than 10,000, and the days are less than you'd find on 1,000 fingers, so that'd be a little more than 3 years maybe at the tops.
Yeah.
They're not going to have money to run prisons, so the prison guards aren't going to be paid. They're going to walk off the job.
yeah.
No one works for free.
Right.
Well, you know, unless they're terribly committed.
The Soviet Union just, you know, collapsed just like that.
Yeah, and I think that'll happen in my lifetime for sure, but I think it'll happen probably pretty soon. I'm trying to accumulate a bunch of cash and especially if this new ballot measure goes on the Oregon ballot about
the minimum wage.
Well, there's two of them. There's the minimum wage, and then there's the which I have a little bit of time on that one, probably about two to 3 years. But the other one is the putting the Oregon, for those of you who don't know, is a controlled alcohol state. It means the state owns all the liquor. They bring it in and they warehouse it for free for all the companies that produce the liquor. They can bring, you know, it has to be approved, and then they bring it into the Oregon warehouse and store it there. And then when they get paid, when the Oregon warehouse ships it out to one of their OLCC stores, which I happen to own one now, and the system is kind of a fascist system. It's not really what you'd call a free market. There's no competition other than, I mean, there's a little bit. You you can't compete on price, but you can compete on service and how nice your store looks and, you know, marketing ideas and things like that. But you really don't compete on price. And yet at the same time, Washington, who had a similar bill, their alcohol now costs 30% more than the state of Oregon, and they're losing literally hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue to the state of Oregon because people are just driving across the border and buying it in Oregon and driving back to Washington. And people down here in Southern Oregon say, well, there's cheap alcohol just across the border in California. Well, if it's in a kind of a non-incorporated area like Hilt or over by a little bit north of Smith River, yeah, you can find spots where the booze – actually, I think the one in Smith River is actually on an Indian reservation. It's really cheap there. But there's only, I think, three stores in the whole state of California that has alcohol cheaper than Oregon. And so it's – you know, I think they could improve the system by just making it a total free market. But this bill that's going on there is not a free market thing. It's gonna make the grocery stores kind of a partial monopoly because you have to have 10,000 square feet to get a permit after that. So all the stores like mine will just go out of business.
Wow. So what this does is it allows the grocery stores to sell liquor. Right now, the grocery stores can sell wine and beer.
Actually, grocery stores can sell liquor right now. They just have to go through the approval process just like I had to.
Oh, interesting.
There's nothing stopping them from doing that.
Right.
And they make it sound like they can't. And they opened up 17 new stores in the Portland area, and one of them is Winco, which is a big grocery store chain. Mm-hmm. They're bidding on one of them, and they might win.
Wow.
Actually, they probably have a good chance to win. I think it would be a good thing. I think they might even let them win just so they can say, hey, there's nothing stopping you.
Wow. Wow.
We don't need this bill. We already let them have, you know, they can already do it. And, you know, there's lots of smaller rural communities where they have grocery stores with liquor in them. And it's not as controlled as people would think, although they do have their rules. Some of them make some sense to me, and some of them are kind of out there. But, you know, I go along. I just try and... you know, kind of put my two cents in where it's appropriate. But,
so did the legalization of marijuana have any effect on your business one way or the other?
Not that I could tell.
Interesting.
I think we're getting more and more customers that have been smoking marijuana before they came into the store than we had before, but it's not a huge number. I mean, once in a while, especially in the evening, Friday night, Saturday night, you'll kind of catch a whiff, go, whoa, someone's having a good time.
Yeah, almost any parking lot around here at night, you walk out and you catch a whiff of something, or driving through a neighborhood.
That's pretty much not just a whiff. It's pretty, I mean, they're not, nobody's trying to hide anything anymore. So anyway, back to whatever. I'm seriously, James Guzman from Borderless. I've written him an email or two about how I'm really considering San Miguel de Allende. It sounds like a really nice place. It has first world services in terms of internet and whatever. And if I could develop some sort of a business I could run from there, I think that'd be a happy place for me to be. And I could live a nice life there, lower cost of living, and I think I may have enough money in another – I think I need another 2 years, but I think I'll have enough.
The guys down in Valdivia, Chile, purchased some land for their Fort
Knox
project.
Yes, I saw that. It's a beautiful place.
You know? So, yeah, it's gorgeous. So that project is moving forward. Very tempting. Mm-hmm. You know, my friends Gabriel and Tanisha rented a house down there in Valdivia, and they had a really good experience, and they moved in, and neighbors were helpful, and people gave them furniture, and people were giving them rides around, and just a really nice community. People were very supportive, and you know, they're fitting right in down there. And and then, you know, there's seasteading, you know, and what's happening with that. I think that I fantasize about this a lot, about, you know, buying a used barge on a tugboat, you know, and tethering up to a seamount in the Caribbean. You know, you work out some kind of a deal with a friendly country like Honduras. Gabriel has a friend who's actually trying to work out a deal with the government of Honduras to seastead off their coast and their territorial waters. And But a lot of these projects are just incredible. You see the architectural renderings and they're just amazing futuristic looking things. And what I was talking to Gabriel about this, what I thought we ought to do is something more realistic, you know, where, you know, that, you know, where global trade is just literally coming to a halt, you know, it's stopped. I mean, there's nothing coming across the Atlantic. Goods are only coming in, from China across the Pacific. But, you know, you could get on. You could find websites where you could buy or lease barges, and it is doable. I mean, you could, you know, get a barge for $150,000, and you could have a network of barges, you know, and you just tether them up, and people can start doing their thing.
You could just build
on top of the barges.
Raise skywalks that go above them, and they support the skywalks, and then you could have an infrastructure on top of that with some lightweight. You don't need much down there for living structure, just maybe something to, so you can, you know, sleep in relative privacy or something.
Right. Yeah. So you set up like an anarcho-pelago, and, you know, and people can do their thing, and you'd probably have, you know, businesses come in that have, specialties that are illegal in the country where they're from. You know, you might have, like, you know, medical tourism, and you know, and you might have some sort of recreational drug sales and gambling and that sort of stuff. And people, you know, within your community, you want to define what you think is acceptable. You know, you go, well,
you know, there's so many minerals in the ocean. If you found a way to extract them economically, you could make a living just mining the ocean.
Yeah, you could do that. You could do aquaculture. You know, you just have your nets, you know, out there, and you could farm your fish out there. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do, because that's where my expertise is. And
sea salt you can make.
Yeah. Well, and you could have tourism too. You could have little cabins, and, you know, the cruise ships can come in. People would jump off, come and stay. You could have little restaurants and things. Yeah, it'd be great. I think it's completely doable. And when you start looking at doing it with barges instead of these, you know, beautiful, intricate projects, you know, like
billion-dollar projects, yeah.
Well, yeah, Luke Crowley has designed some really neat stuff. He's worked with Gabriel on some stuff. I think they even won a contest through the Seasteading Institute with a design. I mean, they're incredible, but and it's going to happen. Those things are going to happen, but, you know, we need to start with square one.
You need to prove it's viable before anyone's going to dump a bunch of money in it.
Yeah, but people are already doing this. Like up in Portland, they're passing a law, you know, that's making it illegal for people to park their ships along the shoreline and on the Willamette River in downtown Portland and live. You know, because people are just living in their boats. You know, and can't have that. You know. Mm-hmm. And so they got to put a stop to that. It's not hurting anybody.
Not a big enough revenue stream for the government who does nothing.
Nope, can't.
So
can't
in order
have
to protect your security here along while you're tethered up, we have to charge you a property tax like we would any homeowner. And
no, they're not even that creative. They just said, can't do it. You know, they put all these limits in place, and now, you know, all the people there, the transient boaters, I guess is what they're calling them, have to decide if they're going to pull up anchor, you know, and move on, or you know, test the government and see if they're going to get a ticket or not. The government says they don't have the resources to enforce it, so, you know, I think a lot of people are just going to test the waters, so to speak.
That'd be good to see. Yeah. Have Kate come in and talk to him.
Yeah.
Really. By the way, Kate, if you're listening to this podcast or this broadcast or a future rerun of it, I want you to know that if I'm ever elected governor, there is no statute of limitations on murder or being an accomplice to murder. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah. You're talking about LaVoy Finicum.
Well, I didn't want to mention names, but I think she knew what we were talking about. Maybe nobody else does.
Yeah.
She sicked the state police on him.
Well,
she's the one she's the one that gave the go ahead on that. So I would assume that makes her a accessory to murder.
Well, it sounded like you were making a threat, and I knew that you weren't.
Well, I probably it's kind of an empty threat because I doubt I'll ever be elected governor. I'm kind of.
Yeah. Well,
as my dad says, you're just not very mainstream, Chuck.
No, you're not mainstream. You will be mainstream, though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. The murder of Lavoie was tragic. I watched that video about 100 times every which way, sped up, slowed down, zoomed in. And from, you know, as I've come to the conclusion that he probably was armed. If you watch interviews with Lavoie, he usually carried two pistols on him. He usually carried a revolver on his left side, or his right side, excuse me, and he carried a 9mm in a shoulder holster on his left side, just under his arm, and I'm sure that the OSP and the FBI watched every Lavoie Finicum interview that there was, trying to figure out what he was like, what weapons he carried, you know, his mannerisms and whatnot, and I bet that they had a plan, and it was really weird when that one agent broke cover, and you know, and there's no audio track with the drone footage, but I bet it exists. But
the people were hiding in the car said they could only hear Lavoie, and he said, "Well, then go ahead and shoot me."
Right. But it looks like you could see recoil on the guy's rifle. And, uh-huh. And it looks to me like he's firing. Now, I was reading an article last month in Guns and Ammo magazine by Sergeant Kyle Lamb about identifying and targeting threats, you know, when you're in a firefight. And in the military, how guys train guys to shoot in the head and the pelvis, because a lot of times they're engaging threats that are wearing body armor. And so going for center of mass doesn't work. Most people train to shoot at center of mass because it's easier. Or they do, you know, like two to the chest and one to the head and stuff. But these guys are training differently. They shoot in the head or the pelvis, you know, and the shooting the pelvis just cripples the threat. And what it looks to me like is like they shot Lavoie in his pelvis on the left hand side.
Yeah, and that's what it looked like to me too, because he didn't try and grab inside his coat.
He was grabbing down.
Yeah.
But then that created a situation to make it look like he was going for the 9mm, which he probably was carrying. They in the media, you know, said that he was carrying it in his pocket, but he didn't carry it in his pocket. He carried it in a shoulder holster, and it was higher up than where he was reaching, but they created a situation that would make him, they knew he was going to reach down to his left. They knew that you shoot somebody there, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, you know? And after he's dead in the snow, they just unleash a torrent of gunfire into the car, so everybody else had to duck down. They couldn't see what they're doing. Then they went out there and they went through the body, maybe planted a gun in his pocket, who knows.
Yeah, I don't think they had to. I think he probably, I don't know for a fact, I'm just speculating, but I think he probably did have his 9mm in his pocket, you know. I doubt that they were making that trip unarmed, you know. And I doubt, and nobody said that he left his guns in the car. I didn't hear him say that, and or anybody say that. I mean, you know, and even Victoria Sharp.
Victoria Sharp said he had them with him either. They just
Victoria Sharp said that he had his guns on him.
Okay.
You know, she said that he did. I tend to agree with her. He probably did, but I can't tell in the video if he had his revolver on or not, you know. Mm-hmm. And I also think that, you know, when he got out, he was probably trying to draw fire away from the vehicle to protect
him.
That's what it looked to me. And then it looks like he shouted out to those guys, and then he turned, and then the guy who'd set up the crossfire situation coming out of the brush, which is ridiculous. What a cluster those guys had going on there. Yeah. You know, that guy comes out of the brush, and they literally set up a crossfire. Well, why would they
if he'd been able to get himself right between those guys before they shot him in the pelvis and then just fall down, they would have shot each other.
He basically was. I mean, they easily could have shot each other the way they had that set up. It was ridiculous how they had that whole thing set up.
That's why they want those state police guys to have a double-digit IQ, Drew.
Well, yeah. I mean, plus that whole ambush, I mean, there was no place for him to go. He comes around that corner. He can't stop. He can't go to the right because there's too much snow. His only out is the left. They fire at the vehicle. That one guy jumps in front of the vehicle to make it look as if he was trying to run him over, but he wasn't.
Swerved to miss him a little bit.
Right. He swerved. You can see where he cuts it a little sharper as he skid into the snow. You know, it's just outrageous what's happening. And I'm really disturbed about what's happened to Santilli too. A lot of people hate Santilli. You know, and I'm not saying I love Santilli, you know, but he was live streaming this whole thing almost all of the time. People say he's a Fed and all this stuff. I don't know. I doubt it. I doubt that he's a Fed.
He could be. Just because you're a Fed doesn't mean they're going to protect you. There was that famous guy that was a Fed. Who was it? They burned him.
Yeah. Who knows?
Hal Turner.
He's in jail right now. And the video that caused all of this was that, you know, there was an event, at the refuge, and, you know, people were there. It was like a big, like, barbecue type of thing. And the Sharp Sisters were there singing, and everybody's hanging out and talking and stuff. And there were these protesters that were there, you know, that with signs and stuff. And Santilli recognized one of the guys from the confrontation with the Pacific Patriots Network and the Idaho 3%, where they literally rode up on the FBI at the airport in Harney County. They found where they were hiding out, and here they were barricaded, and the feds come out all tacked out, full kit. You know, everybody's got their ARs out, and it was a really heated situation. And Joseph Rice from Josephine County Oath Keepers and the founder of the Pacific Patriots Network, he was there, and Brandon Curtis from Idaho 3% was there. And that was where Santilli recognized that guy from, was that event right there. He was wearing sunglasses, and I remember the video, and it was the same guy. And so Santilli calls him out, and he's like, "Hey, you're a Fed. I didn't know you're one of the FBI guys." And he's like, "No, I'm not." You know, and there's this big scene, and there were people there defending him, and everybody started yelling at Santilli. So then he goes out to it. He starts walking away, and everybody's going, "Oh yeah, Santilli, just walk away, just walk away." And he goes to his car, and he pulls out a bullhorn, and he just starts bullhorning over the top of everybody so he could be heard. And my favorite part of this whole video is where he yells, "I am the master protester." Anyway, this is what they charged him with, and everybody else with conspiracy to interfere with the duties of a federal agent or something. Oh, through the use of force and intimidation, blah blah blah. You know, this is stuff that all these guys are being charged with.
Bullhorning is force and intimidation.
Yeah, and the Fed kept saying.
That's right. He was using the truth as a force of intimidation. Yes.
Yeah. And the thing is that they were, the Fed was saying, the FBI guy was yelling, he's trying to incite violence. He wasn't inciting violence. It's completely ridiculous. Anyway, so Santilli's in jail for this, and it's outrageous. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just press. He's a podcaster. You know, he's there doing his show. Living in a crappy motel with his girlfriend, you know, and trying to cover this, and so it makes no sense whatsoever that they're holding him, you know, or that he's been indicted at all. It's ridiculous, you know, and even if he is working for the FBI, why did they indict him on this?
Well, maybe he saw the light. He said, "Hey, I'm on the wrong side."
Maybe turned on him. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not going to get into whether he's a Fed or isn't a Fed. You know,
He's in prison. That's a,
yeah. Right. I mean,
he's at a place where nobody knows. He's been
definitely
detained at an undetermined site. And
the guy who's probably a Fed was the Mark McConnell guy who was driving the vehicle that Ammon Bundy was in, and he was released. And then he's the one that went straight to the press with this BS story about Lavoie's murder.
He was he wasn't even there.
Right, he wasn't even there. So who's the Fed? Well, who's walking around? Who's out walking around, not in jail?
Yeah.
You know, why did everybody else get charged with this stuff, but he just went free? You know, they SWAT teamed Cliven, former guest of our show.
Mm-hmm.
SWAT teamed him at the Portland airport, you know, charged him with a bunch of things, you know, going back to Bunker Hill and the whole Bundy Ranch thing. And then I got word from a friend of ours, who I won't disclose, that he had heard that they were going to start going after guys that were involved in Operation Gold Rush up at the Sugar Pine Mine. I can't confirm this. I don't know if that's true or not, but it makes sense that they would. If they're going after guys that were up at Bunker Hill, you know, they could charge the guys that were involved in Operation Gold Rush with the same stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
I would advise anybody who might be involved in one of those groups just to stay out of the state of Oregon. Because Governor Cade will sick the state. I mean, they can violate whatever constitutional rights you have here, and the governor will just turn a blind eye. She is in their pocket, and maybe a little bit more. She might even be up their rear end. Who knows? Her last name has been shortened from Kate Brown Nose to just Kate Brown. So,
yeah, I like to call her Governor Brownstein.
Yeah,
you know, you could call her Governor Brown Shirt.
There we go. Yeah, Governor Kate Brown Shirt. I mean, Brown Stain. I mean, Brown Nose. I mean, Brown. Yeah.
Do people get to vote for a new governor? Or is
I don't
just
think
it
would
it
matter. I think it's she probably will deny our voting privileges because it's not a right. It's a privilege, according to her.
Well, we're coming up on the end.
We are. Life goes by fast.
Yeah, it goes by really fast. You know,
I think
this all started out. I just want to say really quickly, this all started out one day when we were at a peace protest with the Occupy people in downtown Medford.
Yeah.
We were standing on a street corner with signs.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, this has been a great 3.5 years, Jules. I can't thank you enough for the opportunity to do this. I wish I had more time that I could keep doing this because I really enjoy it, but. I got so much to do. And if I'm going to do a good job at it, which I really want to, I just got to devote more time to what's going on. My store's doing really well, and I want to keep it going in that direction. So that's that story. And we were going to have David on with us tonight. I think he got busy. He really enjoyed his time on the show too. And contrary to any rumors out there, all three of us are still good friends. We like each other a lot. I doubt I could find two more philosophically aligned people than David and Drew. I was just very happy to be on the show with them.
Yep, you guys are my best friends. Love you guys.
So I'm going to thank everybody in the audience out there that listened to us over this time. I know you guys don't always agree with this. Sometimes I say some really stupid things that I don't say them right. And sometimes I say things that are they may go over everybody else's head, you know, because I don't say them very well. I don't make my point the right way. So I appreciate you sticking with me when I make those kinds of faux pas or whatever. So I thought I heard music, but it wasn't coming on yet. So Drew, you got any final words?
Well, it's just, you know, this was a great platform to get our ideas out there. And, you know, I'm just trying to work with my aquaponics meetup group and getting people to actually put together systems and grow their own food. So that's where, I'm reaching out right now. We got a meeting this Sunday, and I'm trying to hold a meeting once a month and get people growing their own food. So
yeah,
you could look at my stuff, Rogue Valley Aquaponics Meetup Group. And my website, pyramidpurefoods.com.
Yeah, and it's been great. This is the last episode, and look forward to some great reruns until we find a replacement. See y'all sometime down the road. Bye.